Ladies and gentlemen, how wonderful to welcome such a large and diverse audience as this on a cold and wet Canberra turning day, a day turning from summer autumn into winter autumn, which is a bit sad in Canberra. But it's a delight to welcome you all this evening to this fellowship presentation by Professor Klaas Neumann, Professor of History at Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne. I'm Robin Holmes, and I'm the senior curator who's very lucky to be responsible for the fellowships program, and I will perhaps explain why I feel so lucky as the night goes on. And as we begin, of course, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, and we thank their elders, past and present, for caring for this land as we now are privileged to call home. And I think that has very special meaning tonight because so many of you have no doubt come at some point in your life from somewhere else to Australia as home and perhaps to Canberra as home and understand something of the nuances that Klaas will be speaking about this evening. And perhaps we most especially welcome the embassy friends and the ambassador of Hungary tonight, because we have a Hungarian story especially for you, and it's a great pleasure, Your Excellency Attila Gruber and your friends, that you have joined us for this evening as a kind of representation of what it's like for many people still coming to Australia. For his fellowship, Klaas has commenced a new research project. That's a bit unusual for fellows. Usually they're in the midst of a project and come here to kind of continue it when they know what they're looking for. But Klaas came with an idea, and he really started investigating from scratch the published recollections of Australian immigrants from non-English speaking backgrounds. Klaas has titled his presentation New Lives in a New Country with an exclamation, no, a question mark at the end. Not an exclamation mark. And I suspect that this because his fellowship research is raising as many questions and challenges as it has provided answers. Issues that relate to home, to displacement and resettlement, to global migration and the refugee experience, a very contemporary and hot issue. And of course, to people adapting to a new land, language and culture over a long period. Klaas is also interested in why, when and how people choose to write down and publish their often intimate life stories and memories. His fellowship research has been opening up new ways of thinking about a whole body of published literature that the library's been collecting for a very long time, but that few have thought to examine from the perspectives and paradigms of mainstream Australian history. For the library, as the national institution responsible for collecting, or indeed for finding, collecting and preserving these published stories, this has been a particularly rewarding fellowship experience. And we thank you, Klaas, for the many insights and ideas that you've been discussing and sharing with staff about how, indeed, to collect this very difficult material. As a historian, Klaas has long written about matters pertaining to people's displacement, ethnicity and cultural experience. He's written books, articles and radio plays about memoirs and memories of Nazi Germany, Papua New Guinean history, World War II internment, refugee and asylum seeker policy, settler-Indigenous relations, the White Australia policy, volcanoes and other topics. Not quite sure where the volcanoes fit into that, but perhaps they displace people. While first and foremost a scholar, Klaas is also a noted public commentator. He contributes regularly to Inside Story and on occasions for the Fairfax Press around the nation, as you may have noted in his opinion piece this morning in the Canberra Times and the Sydney Morning Herald. You can indeed hear him again tomorrow evening, if you so choose, at 6 o'clock at the Street Theatre on a panel for ABC Radio National's Big Ideas program examining creative and cultural responses to migration and the refugee crisis in Australia. His latest book, Across the Seas, I should know it by memory by now, A History of Australia's Response to Refugees, has recently been shortlisted for the Non-Fiction Prize in the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards. Hee hee, bravo. The NLA Bookshop has tonight made you a very special offer for this event. If you pick up the flyer, which is out on the table, and if you haven't seen one, they're floating around, and hand it to a staff member tonight, then you can get 10% off the price of your copy at the National Library Bookshop. Klaus's Fellowship has been made possible by the generosity of donors Deirdre and Kevin McCann and the Macquarie Group Foundation. With the renewal of the National Library Fellowships through philanthropy, we've been really fortunate to have had a really vibrant group of four fellows here together at the library at the same time for the last 3 months. So we have two more fellowship presentations, one in a fortnight time when Michelle Arrow will be reinvestigating Australia in the 1970s with her talk on private lives and public politics, and then archivist Michael Piggott on Ferguson's 400-plus manuscripts the following fortnight. But tonight, it's Klaus's turn. So please welcome Klaus Neumann. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Robin, for those very kind words of introduction. And thank you to all of you, can you all hear me, for coming along tonight. It's a great pleasure to see so many familiar faces and some faces who became unfamiliar because I haven't seen them for such a long time. Now, before I start with my lecture, I want to thank a few people. First of all, Robin Holmes, who is responsible for the fellowship program at the National Library and who has looked after me and the other fellows who've been here at the same time. And there were so many other people in the library who have been welcoming, who have always been willing to talk to us about our interests, and I won't be able to name them all, but I just want to mention a few names. Beth Mansfield, who is sitting...
She's still outside.
She's drinking all the wine. Katrina Anderson, Margie Byrne, Andrew Sargent, Meredith Batten, and I would like to especially thank you, the Director General of the National Library of Australia, Anne-Marie Schwertle, who's hiding in the back row there. I think it is very special that you've turned up for this lecture. I think if I ever got my dean to come to one of my lectures or talks at the university, I would be worried. So thank you to the National Library for providing such a fantastic experience. I really had such a good time. So if there's a job going, just let me know. And then a special thank you to my three fellow fellows. Agnieszka Sobocinska, who unfortunately already returned to Melbourne, Michelle Arrow and Michael Piggott, and you will hear more from them later on. What does that mean? What does he mean? And then thank you to my sponsors. I don't think I've ever said that before. Deirdre and Kevin McCann and the Macquarie Group Foundation. So that sounds good. Thank you to my sponsors. So any sponsors, just come and see me afterwards. All right. Want to see whether I can put that somewhere without all the pieces of paper falling down. Five issues have caught my attention when reading the published recollections of migrants from non-English-speaking backgrounds over the past 10 weeks. What can these texts tell us about the experience of migration? What do they reveal about Australia? What do they have in common? How do these texts relate to Australian history? History in the sense of the narratives told about Australia's past. Does a memoir written by a Holocaust survivor who arrived in Australia in 1947, which deals exclusively with the period 1940 to 1945, actually qualify as an Australian history? I believe it does, and I'm going to say more about that later. And finally, following on from this interest in the relationship of migrants' recollections to Australian history. I'm curious about how these and related texts are collected, how they're preserved, curated, and made publicly available, and whether there are any viable alternatives to current collecting and curatorial practices. I won't talk about that in my lecture, but I'd be happy to address that issue in the discussion afterwards. My archive of primary texts is large. It includes more than 1,000 books in the collection of the National Library alone. No, I have not read all of them. And at least a couple of hundred more in other libraries in Australia or overseas. I'm very vague about the exact number. That's for two reasons. First, it has been very difficult to readily identify migrants' published recollections in library catalogues. It has also been tricky to decide which books to include in my archive. I opted for broad criteria and read also memoirs with fictional elements, ghost-written autobiographies, and biographies that draw on the recorded collections of the biographical subjects. I ended up with a rather messy and diffuse body of texts, biographies, autobiographies, and memoirs, self-published texts that were edited only by their authors, and texts published by commercial publishers which had gone through an extensive editing process, zines and booklets of less than 50 pages, and weighty tomes of more than 500 pages, books that are little more than stapled mimeographs, and lavishly illustrated coffee table books, memoirs that double as works of philosophy, and memoirs directed at children. Texts written in English, texts written in the writer's native language, and translations. Recollections of famous, infamous, and ordinary Australians. Texts produced only for the writer's immediate family, and texts written for a large audience. Texts that have obvious literary merits, and texts that are very poorly written. And books written for a diasporic audience, for an Australian audience, or for readers in the writer's native country. Most of these texts, these 1,000 plus texts, are either self-published or put out by companies that specialize in publishing for niche markets. Of 74 books published last year and held in at least one Australian library, no more than 8 would have made it onto the shelves of non-specialist bookshops. Most of the books that form my archive are obscure. They are held only by a handful of libraries, have been read mainly by family and friends, and never made it onto the reading list of book clubs or became prescribed readings in schools. Only one became a genuine bestseller. That is Andor's The Luckiest Refugee, which was first published in 2010 and is still widely available. So this is one out of more than 1,000. Most biographical subjects are usually at least in their 50s when their recollections are published. Most have been in Australia for at least 2 decades. Migrant women are as likely as men to write their memoirs, but the members of some ethnic communities are clearly overrepresented. A comparatively large proportion of texts are authored by migrants who identify as Jewish, and many of these memoirs are testimonies. Refugees are also overrepresented. Now, so much about the overall body of text, but in the following I'm actually going to focus on 6 books. I don't pretend that they are representative. The overall corpus of texts is too diverse to be adequately represented by only 6 titles. The 6 books are also unrepresentative because I didn't include books I found tedious to read. And believe me, there are many migrants' memoirs that fall into that category. Because I knew I had to read them, you know, once or twice again. And then I didn't include authors whose persona I disliked. In fact, I more than just liked some of the authors I chose. At least 2 of them I adored. But I'm nevertheless trying to give you an idea of the diversity of my archive and have therefore selected what I believe to be a cross-section. So here are my six books in the order in which they were published. Walter Adamson's, or Walter Adamson's, Ausgerechnet Australien was released by a small West German press in 1974. 10 years later, an English version, which is not a faithful translation, was published in Australia under the title Australia of All Places and brought to the attention of a wider audience when it was broadcast in 10 installments on ABC Radio. Adamson had self-published the first half of Ausgerechnet Australien in Germany in 1973 as Das Australische Einmaleins. Both this earlier book and Ausgerechnet Australien include an appendix with a poem, The Immigrant, in English and with a German translation. The poem had appeared in Australian Women's Weekly, of all places, in 1963. Born in 1911 in Königsberg, today's Kaliningrad, in Ostprussia, now East Prussia, Adamson, then Adamson, migrated to Australia in 1939 from Italy. The Nazis had deemed him to be a Jew, but he did not identify as Jewish. He published four other books, one in German, which is available in an English translation, and three in English. In 1949, Adamson left Australia for Bolivia, where he taught English. He returned to Australia in 1953, married an Australian, and lived in Melbourne until his death in 2010. Magda Bozic's Gather Your Dreams was published in 1984. Born in 1915 in Budapest, Bozic migrated to Australia from Hungary in 1948, and thereafter lived mostly in Canberra, which initially struck her as a dreadful place, a collection of paddocks and flies and loneliness and magpies picking your brains in spring. She worked in the public service as a secretary at the ANU and for the Human Rights Commission. That last job earned her an Order of Australia medal, which the Queen personally bestowed on her in 1986 when she visited. Bozic died, I believe, in 2001. Gather Your Dreams was her only book. She wrote it not least for her close friend Jean Martin, a sociologist and author of the remarkable 1965 study Refugee Settlers. Gather Your Dream was published by a small Melbourne publisher, Hodja Educational Resources, incidentally the same press that published Adamson's English version of Ausgerechnet Australien, Australia of All Places, also in 1984. Abbas al-Zayn was born in 1963 into a Shia Muslim family in Beirut. He first left Lebanon in 1986 to study and work in the UK and did not return until 1994. 1 year later, he moved to Australia. And he came to Australia as a skilled migrant on a skilled migrant visa. Between 2002 and 2004, he once again lived in Beirut. His memoir, Leave to Remain, was published in 2009, and the following year it won a New South Wales Premier's Literary Award. Al-Zayn is the author of several other books in English. He currently lives in Sydney and teaches engineering at the University of Sydney. Leave to Remain was published by University of Queensland Press. Mariam Issa self-published A Resilient Life, One Woman's Refugee Journey in 2012. It's the only one of the six books I'm discussing tonight that is not in the National Library's collection. Issa was born in 1968 in Somalia, but grew up in Kenya. She fled Somalia after the Somali Civil War broke out in 1991, and in 1998 she arrived in Australia on a humanitarian visa. She lives in Melbourne. The book, The Vastesi Lass, is a biography of Maria Cicilliti, authored by Ellen Hardy and self-published last year. Cicilliti was born in Italy in 1927, migrated to Australia in 1952, and for the past 62 years has lived in Bunbury in WA. There she established and ran a boarding house, a restaurant, and a shop. Hers is a rags-to-riches story. When following her arrival in Australia, she and her children lived for 18 months in a tent. And then 3 decades later, she had an investment portfolio with 11 houses. And my last text is Vera, My Story, an autobiography of Vera Wasowski, the gorgeous woman whose picture is on the flyer advertising this lecture. And this book is authored by her and award-winning and prolific biographer Robert Hillman. Hillman wrote other memoirs of people who came to Australia as refugees, including The Ruckmaker of Mazar-e-Sharif with Hazara refugee Najaf Mazari, first released in 2008, and Shining, about the life of Somali refugee Abdi Aden, which came out in 2015. Vera, My Story, was also published last year. Wasowski is Jewish and was born in 1934 in Lwów, then a city in Poland, it's now in the Ukraine. She survived the Holocaust and, unlike most survivors, initially remained in Poland after the war. She migrated to Australia in 1958, lived for many years in Melbourne, worked initially as a seamstress and then as a producer on the ABC's This Day Tonight, and currently she lives in Byron Bay. So we have 2 books from the 1970s and 1980s, and 4 from the last 10 years. 1 Italian, 1 Hungarian, 1 Polish Jew, 1 German, who would have been labeled non-Aryan Christian by the Australian immigration authorities when he arrived, 1 Lebanese and 1 Somali. 4 of them came to Australia as refugees, although only 2, Adamson and Issa, were classified as such at the time. Neither Cicilliti, who had only had 2 years of formal schooling, nor Adamson spoke any English when they arrived. At the other end of the spectrum, Al Zain, who had of course studied in the UK, was already fluent in English when he arrived in Sydney in 1995. 4 of the books are memoirs or autobiographies. 1 is an as told to autobiography, that is Vera, and 1 a biography. The mode of publication often determines a book's readership. While none of the books has been widely read, Maria Cicilliti's self-published biography can be found in only 1 public library, namely the National Library. So this is the only publicly available copy in Australia. Mariam Issa's book is held by only 5 Australian libraries, and Adamson's Ausgerechnet Australien by only 4. The English translation of Adamson's book and Bozich's Gather Your Dreams are held by fewer than 30 libraries each. Between 70 and 80 Australian libraries hold copies of Vera, My Story, or Abbas El Zain's Leave to Remain. When selecting the 6 books, I try to give you an idea of the diversity of authors and contexts and texts. It occurred to me only afterwards that my sample is unrepresentative, not only because I found all 6 authors to be likable. The women among them are all exceptionally strong, full of initiative, determined, and tireless in their pursuits. Make of that what you will. 6 texts, 6 migrants, or rather 7. Having lived in Australia for more than half of my life and writing in a language other than the one I grew up with, I'm admittedly drawn to some of these memoirs because they strike a chord. Thus, sometimes when you're referring to migrants tonight, I might use the first person plural. But don't be alarmed, this is not a talk about me. Nor is it, in the last instance, a talk about migrants, about migrant identities or migrant selves. Here my work differs from most of what has been written about migrants and their creative output. I'm not so much interested in their texts or in them as migrants, but rather in all of us as members of a society that includes a large proportion of people born overseas. I'm not even primarily interested in the specific subject matter of these books, such as leaving arriving, settling in. The thrust of my argument, as will hopefully become apparent, is concerned with Australia rather than with the migration experiences of Walter Adamson, Magda Bozic, Miriam Issar, Maria Cicilliti, Abbas El-Zayn, and Vera Wozowski. But before I develop my central argument, I shall say more about the six books. All six are highly selective representations of their protagonists' lives.
When I read this book that is taking longer to write than War and Peace, I know what I will think. I'll think, yes, I did that, but so much more, and the so much more isn't here.
That's Vera Wozowski talking.
Such a ridiculous thing to contemplate, the book of Vera, 80,000 words and 18 photographs. And this is supposed to represent a life of 80 years, to convey the essence of Vera to total strangers.
At least Wozowski is upfront about the fact that much has been left out. Maria Cicilliti's life is well under 10,000 words. Surely that's not all there is to 88 years of her life. Walter Adamson's and Magda Bozic's memoirs are also rather slim. Like several other memoirs written by migrants in the 1960s, 1970s, and 1980s, they contain only sparse references to their pre-migration lives. Gather Your Dreams does not reveal anything about Bozic's childhood and youth. We never learn when and where she was born. Many readers would have done what the author of the entry about Bozic in the Auslit database of Australian literature did. That is, make assumptions on the basis of her surname, which she acquired when she married a Croatian migrant 2 years after her arrival in Australia. If you can't read that, it says Magda Bozic, born 1926, which is also wrong, ex-Yugoslavia. Of the six books, Walter Adamson's Ausgerechnet Australien appears closest to fiction. The first part of the book, that is the part that was published previously, is Das Australische Einmal Eins, is about somebody called Anders. This name translates as other or different in English. Like Adamson, Anders, who tells his story in the first person, arrived in Melbourne shortly before the outbreak of the Second World War, worked as a butler, and eventually joined the Australian Army, where he rose to the rank of sergeant and served as an interpreter in the 23rd Garrison Battalion that was tasked with guarding Italian POWs. The second part of Ausgerechnet Australien is set more than 20 years later. The narrator befriends Anders while traveling by plane from Australia to Germany, and the narrative is about both men's journey and about the intervening years of Anders' life, which he then recounts to the narrator. But by the end of the book, the narrator suggests that actually he and Anders are the same person, so it is somewhat confusing. But does it really matter whether an autobiographical text contains fictional elements? In order to appreciate how somebody experienced migration, how she responded to Australia, and how she maintained, lost, or developed emotional attachments to old and new homes, we don't need to know a wealth of factually correct details about her life. Having said that, I believe that the gaps in somebody's life narrative are actually very significant. And here I don't mean the fact that Bozic did not write about her first marriage and that Adamson chose not to mention his first wife, who had accompanied him to Australia. But why is it that neither Bozic in Gather Your Dreams nor Adamson in Ausgerechnet Australien tell the reader much about their lives before their migration? As migrants who wrote in the 1970s and early 1980s, at least 3 decades after their arrival in Australia, they had successfully assimilated by blotting out these biographical circumstances that brought them to Australia in the first place and that had forced them to leave Europe. Elsewhere, Adamson wrote extensively, albeit never in English, about the city where he was born. But in his writings about his native Königsberg, the places he describes are frozen in time. as if the progression of time had been arrested in 1938 when Adamson fled Germany. Adamson and Bozich both identified foremost as migrants. The process of coming to terms with their adopted country was the obvious subject matter for their memoirs. At the time, migrants who wrote about their pre-migration lives, sometimes exclusively so, did so in order to testify about the Holocaust or about Stalinist repression. By the early 1990s, that had changed. Very few of the autobiographical recollections published in the last 25 years are not also about their authors' lives in their native countries. Thus, the books featuring the lives of Maria Cigaliti, Abbas El-Zayn, Vera Wazowski, and Mariam Issa are not only, and in the cases of El-Zayn and Issa, not even predominantly about Australia. El-Zayn and Issa are not any less at home in Australia than Adamson and Bozich were, but they are perhaps more comfortable with not having tried to become something else, somebody born in this country. When Issa first arrived in Melbourne, she was obsessed with integration. Now she says, I'm rightfully my own being, my own self, and I can live anywhere in the world now. When we think of migration, we tend to think of gains. Gains for the destination country and gains for the migrant. For the latter, however, migration is often also associated with losses. There is the loss of the ability to express one's feeling and to name one's surroundings without having to think twice about what to say. Let's listen to Magda Bozich. If I can get this to work.
I am leaving behind the only language which was my strength and joy in life, which made me communicate, which built bridges, which broke sometimes and blow up bridges as well. But it was all there all the time. It's gone now, I left it behind. I'm there, naked, so to speak, in the world.
And let's also listen to Abbas El-Zayn.
Migrants survive by growing body parts. New ears and new eyes are perhaps the most valuable acquisitions. New tongues are much harder to come by.
And there is the loss of familiar faces, familiar physical environments, and familiar cultural traits. That is a loss experienced by most migrants, including those who had to flee their native countries. It is a loss that is often more acutely felt in the first few years in the new country, when faces are unfamiliar and unreadable, the environment is experienced as hostile, and the new country's cultural practices appear utterly bizarre. In Australia, migrants are not expected to dwell on these losses. It is as if we are told, surely Australia has enough to offer you newcomers to make you forget what you left behind. How do you like Australia? New arrivals are routinely asked, and the answer to that question is presumed to be self-evident. Migrants often find it difficult to convey to people in the new country, but also to those back home, that they have a conflicted relationship with the places they left behind. Sometimes there were hellholes to escape from, but at the same time, so much more interesting than anything Australia had to offer. Surely few places would have been more hellish than Beirut during the Lebanese Civil War, but then again,
Beirut was our city, and no one could take this away from us. We lived in the precarious space that anarchy created, between the ever-present possibility of violent death and a heightened sense of living. There was a social, even artistic intensity to our experience of the city, generated, no doubt, by the chaotic energy of our 20s and the semi-permanent state of war hanging over us.
When I come to Australia, people say, from Poland? Poor Vera. So backward, so tedious, the communist full of shit. But you escaped. It is difficult to make such people understand, and do I even have the patience for it? That the bars and nightclubs of Warsaw, those that I knew, where the scornful, the disdainful, the happy-go-lucky, the satirical went for consolation, They were places of excitement and spectacle.
I was born in the wrong country, a country where history runs amok at regular intervals, Magda Bosic wrote. But she also remembered times in that same country when life was as sweet as acacia honey. And here is Magda Bosic again, this time talking to Caroline Jones, first about the loss she experienced when emerging out of an air raid shelter after the bombing of Budapest, and then when leaving Hungary to migrate to Australia.
And you really just weep and weep for a life that has gone forever, not your own personal property and not your life in the sense that, well, you won't be rich or won't be poor, but the life of Budapest as it was in that few precious, wonderful years that you have known before the war broke out. When you think about the crisis points in life, well, very often you really can't put it in a tidy order and to say, this is a crisis and put a red ribbon around it. But really, days like when you leave your country forever, when everybody says, aren't you lucky you were able to live? And you want to say, why am I lucky that I am able to leave the country I loved and never wanted to leave? Why I have to be lucky for that?
Lucky you, Abbas El-Zain is told by his dentist.
My dentist went on to inform me that I was one of the fortunate few among the multitudes who sought an Australian visa every year. Suddenly, unwittingly, my country of origin turned into a dark place that one could only escape from. The possibility that migration could be unlucky did not seem to have occurred to my dentist.
Gather your dreams, Magda Bosic's brother, who had migrated to Australia in 1939, tells his family back in Budapest in 1945, encouraging them to follow him. These dreams are not about Australia. For very few migrants from non-English-speaking backgrounds, Australia was the place of their dreams. Often migrating to Australia was merely a better option than staying. That was the case for Maria and Nicola Cicilitti, who saw no future for themselves in post-war Italy and made use of the fact that Maria's brother had already settled in Western Australia and was thus able to sponsor them. There is nothing in Adamson's writings that reveals why he ended up in Australia, of all places. It seems that he had no choice. He lets Anders say in his book, I was only an insignificant mote of dust in that gigantic cloud which, once whirled up to the sky, spread over the whole world to subside slowly and with